Hello everybody. This is the translation of Pascal Girard's message for Sunday the 6th of June. The reading is taken from Luke chapter 18 and verses 9 to 14, and I'm reading from the New International Version. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, "God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get." But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, "God, have mercy on me, a sinner." I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. The first point: arrogant and hypocrites. Pharisees and tax collectors. Few Bible stories are as well known in and outside churches as the one Jesus tells here. The Pharisees are literally synonymous with arrogance and especially hypocrisy. Pharisee, you are hypocrites. A story that could be summed up like this and which speaks fully of life. I will quote what I read on April the 14th in the columns of the newspaper Le Monde. The history of interpretation has fostered negative images of the Pharisees. And often, over time, this view has been attributed by Christians to Jews in general. In our world, such negative stereotypes have unfortunately become too common, admitted the Pope in May 2019. The Pharisee was the symbol of the Jews. This is how they are, the Jews, hypocrites and arrogant. There are images that span the ages, with their share of errors, injustice and insults. Images more arrogant than the so-called arrogance they claim to fight. But this story allows us to dive into the surprising and liberating message that Jesus has in store for us. My second point, a current problem. When we hear or read this story today, we are faced with a very different problem from that of Jesus' contemporaries. But let's start by presenting a few traits unique to each character in the story. The first character, the Pharisee, would therefore be a person of high moral character and integrity, incorruptible. He is all the more recognised and appreciated as he gives a lot. Of himself, I don't know, but certainly of his money. If he lived today, he would live in a sustainable and environmentally conscious way. Get around by bicycle rather than car. Live in a zero-energy house with solar panels and geothermal heat pump. Buy organic and fair trade products. He would cook mainly vegetarian meals, own a fair trade cell phone that costs 300 euros and can do nothing more than make a phone call. He would have a refurbished laptop. He would work for refugees and against racism and xenophobia. Of course, he would wear a mask and keep his distance, and he would know the Bible and obey the commandments of the Lord. Next to him, we would have a rather shady character, who no one really knows what he does for a living. Every year, there would be a new Audi or BMW in the double garage at the side of his house. I don't think he would always keep his promises, and he would be addicted to alcohol. Some things would disturb the tranquility and reputation of the neighbourhood. Moreover, at night we would see the light twinkling through the slats of his shutters very regularly. It seems, well, this is what they say, that he would spend the night in front of his PC on hidden and unsavoury networks and not recommended for good people. This is called the dark net. There he would openly express what he does not yet dare to say in public. A bit racist, he's also a conspirator. The coronavirus. It was the government that passed it on to us. So much for a modern description of the two characters in the story. And Jesus said, in verse 14, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. How can you say such a thing? Third point, a troubling situation, the Pharisee. Jesus' listeners asked themselves this question when he related this story by way of example. Rather, we are witnessing a typical discussion among Israelites in which Jesus interferes. How do you become righteous before God? An old question that goes on and on. It's rather interesting to examine the role of the Pharisees. Their name, which means the separated, probably appeared in the crisis that followed the exile and advocated a clear separation from the foreign peoples who had come to live in the country in the meantime. They had become more and more influential among the Israelite people. In the time of Jesus and the early Christians, we know of different currents from the most liberal to the narrowest. For example, radical movements like the Zealots who wanted to apply the law by force. The motive of the Pharisees is found in the Torah. You will be for me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. Exodus 19 verse 6. As a result, they sought to live from day to day according to the Torah. Their daily life also, their food, their clothing and all the rites were regulated according to the commandments of purity. After the destruction of the temple during the war, Judaism was able to continue to live. The Pharisees were the spiritual elite. Jesus describes someone like this in the temple, where the presence of God becomes tangible, where one can experience the mercy of God. We read in verses 11 and 12, the Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. Prayer includes all of spiritual life. The Pharisee deploys it before God. So what's wrong with that? He even gives thanks. This is what we ourselves do by praying on all occasions. Before meals, for example, we give thanks. What is wrong with this practice? Fourth point, a troubling situation, the tax collector. So Jesus brings in the tax collector. We read in verse 13, but the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. The tax collector is only there because his attitude contrasts with that of the Pharisee. Otherwise, his presence would be irrelevant. In Jesus' day, in occupied Israel, numerous custom zones were established, allocated by the authorities in place to private companies, perhaps to self-employed people. The taxes collected by the tax collectors went to the empire, but not all. Part of the taxes were to allow the tax collector to live, and sometimes gave him the opportunity to enrich himself. This type of organisation led to fraud, and that is one reason why tax collectors were so unpopular. And then they were at the service of the occupiers and therefore considered unclean by the population, especially, of course, by the Pharisees. So a tax collector doesn't really belong in the temple, but he alone is right before God, not the Pharisee. What does the tax collector have that the Pharisee doesn't have? Point 5. To those who think they are pious and righteous. The opening sentence of the Gospel gives us a key. This story is for people who believed they were pious and righteous and who looked down on others. This is the central point of the story, the reason Jesus tells it. The Pharisee's prayer is, for the most part, quite correct. He gives thanks to God. What more could you ask for? But in the words of prayer, the Pharisee goes a little too far. His self-confidence turns into an arrogance that devalues and demeans others. The Pharisee prays without saying a word. Jesus puts it in an ironically ambiguous way. The Pharisee was making this prayer inwardly. But God is not at all at the centre of his prayer. The Pharisee prays for himself. becomes a little clearer when he lists his religious accomplishments. Let's review this part of the text in verse 11. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. The Pharisee has no other person in mind than himself. He doesn't need God, and he doesn't see his neighbour. Jesus describes the reverse pattern with the tax collector. Let's review how things go with him. Verse 13. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but he beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. He keeps his distance. He does not consider himself pure enough to approach the sacred space of the temple. He doesn't look up to God. He beats his breast. All self-confidence is gone. And this tax collector is asking for exactly what Jesus came for, reconciliation. He wants to be reconciled with God again, and in doing so, he renounces all that he is so as to receive the grace of God. When the tax collector looks at himself, he realizes that he has nothing to offer God. But neither does he say, others are even worse than me. Sometimes that's our excuse too. We polish the outside, we make it shiny, and we end up saying, always better than. Or in an arrogant exaggeration, I'm glad I'm not like. Point 6. Fragile arrogance. This is how Jesus interprets the account of his example. It is directed against an attitude that considers itself better and devalues others by judging them and declaring them void. If we do this, then what we think of radical grace, grace totally without presuppositions. The arrogance of the Pharisee is very fragile, like all human arrogance. The tax collector, on the other hand, makes himself very vulnerable, and in this he is open to the message of Jesus. Jesus wants to guide his listeners, and us today. He wants us to perceive his gaze filled with grace on us, so that we too look that way, that we do not spend our time polishing our facade, but that we come out of our despair, and that we recognise that we do not, are not, condemned, and that Jesus wants to put our life in order. That's what he came to do. Point 7. Humility. How to be righteous in life? To this very important question, Jesus' listeners wanted a clear answer. What is good? What is bad? What is right? What is wrong? Jesus' message is new and surprising. The Pharisee is wrong, the tax collector is right. The one who seems morally intact, no. The suspicious type, yes. The Pharisee values himself by devaluing others. The tax collector knows he has nothing to show. I said it before, for us today there is a real problem with this story. We know the fall as soon as the word Pharisee appears in the text, because that word is already tainted. We know that in the end it will be wrong. And the tax collector is the right guy. This is not necessarily how we would call our modern tax collectors today, but in every context, its interpretation, the tax collector is this poor guy who is so humble. All the same, let's not make a novel out of a short story. Neither the life of the tax collector is portrayed positively, nor that of the Pharisee is devalued. It's about praying, living before God, living for the message of Jesus. Perhaps this point can be clarified by examining how such a story might continue. What will happen when the tax collector returns to the temple after 1 year? Maybe he would change his mind and consider himself to be not such a bad guy after all. This brings us to the real fundamental problem of humility. Humility can become a virtue, an accomplishment to the point where we can become proud of being humble. Because that's the problem with humility. This is the paradox. I can be so humble that I feel better than others. The grace of Jesus is different. How to be righteous before God and become the person we are meant to be in the sight of God. At the risk of disappointing you, we cannot succeed in being good and righteous. At the risk of reassuring you, we don't need it. The insight of the tax collector set him on the right track so that Jesus can take him as an example of a person who returned home reconciled to God. How can a person become like this? When we put ourselves in the position of listeners, we come to the place where Jesus tells his story, the temple. Jesus did not choose this place by chance. God is there. The grace of God can be experienced there, especially on feast days. There are no more temples, but Jesus' message frees us from self-centeredness. Fixation on our own achievements, pride and arrogance, and also pride in our own humility. God's grace is undeserved and not deserved. This story therefore leads us to the centre of Jesus' message, but also to the centre of our own existence. Truly sincere relationships are only possible among us humans. When we also admit our weaknesses, mistakes and failures. When we don't just polish the facade in front of others. When we experience forgiveness without having to provide new evidence again and again. When we experience undeserved grace in this way, this is when we come closer to each other. Grace and reconciliation are not for self-improvement and are not therapy, but they are not optional either. They make it possible to draw close to God again and to others. They tell us about God and forgiveness. He knows how I am. But by asking for God's forgiveness, I get to know myself and my limits. Ultimately, our main task is to proclaim the message of undeserved grace bestowed by God. In our society, we have become accustomed to comparing. Compare education levels, skills, prices, and more. We will benefit from living in a society that lives less on comparison. We would do well to live in a church where people do not make comparisons, at most to stimulate someone. Or to encourage someone, but surely not to devalue someone, yet it is so quickly done. As you say to yourself, ah, may I never be like this Pharisee. After hearing this story, notice that Jesus is not asking you to improve yourself, to grow spiritually, neither does Jesus ask us to identify the two types of characters in the story around us. This is God's business, but Jesus said, if you look at yourself with my eyes, then look at others that way, with eyes full of grace. And then, with any luck, we will be able to thank God for what he does and operates in our lives without needing to devalue others in a much different way from this Pharisee. Amen.